The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Great to have you in. Welcome to it. Saturday morning edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You got a little football today, the Heisman ceremony. But man, it's kind of shifted to basketball and volleyball time as Nebraska back in practice yesterday, getting ready for Rocky Top. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning, and great to be with you on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. Numbers to join us this morning, 466-3776, 466-3776, toll-free 1-800-825-5865, and always can take us with you on your phone or tablet with the ESPN 1480 mobile app. We'll get into some discussion about Dante Williams, his first practice yesterday as a Nebraska coach after being on the road recruiting. A lot of recruiting thoughts to talk about. Big weekend of visitors for Nebraska. And our rewind segment in about 15 minutes. A dear friend of the show, armed and dangerous quarterback guru, Steve Calhoun. You know who he's trained in the NFL. You know who he's trained that's spent time at Nebraska. And his son, Steve Calhoun's son, recruited at one time by Dante Williams when Dante was at Washington.
That's a nice little angle there.
And San Jose State. So that conversation happened early in the week. It's once the hiring became official, Mark. So that conversation with Steve Calhoun. In hour two, Brandon Vogel of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues will spend some time with us talking Nebraska-Tennessee. He'll also give us a thought or two on just what makes Nebraska volleyball so dominant, and specifically the culture of winning that was in full effect. 3-hour marathon against Penn State yesterday. I picked my spots to talk volleyball because there's brighter people to do it. But man, it was incredible yesterday. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, will be with us in hour two. And Aaron Sorensen of HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Aaron, so awesome. And does such a great job, HailVarsity.com. She'll join us, her thoughts on recruiting. Also, she was not only at volleyball yesterday, but also at the Nebraska football practice when Dante Williams got to meet the media. Kranak, how you doing this morning? You got the fireplace cranked up? It's a bit nippy outside.
Well, it's actually a relief from the last couple of days, so I don't have it fired up yet. I'm just fired up because it's Nebraska ball, and you know they're going to go down to Lawrence and get a quality win. So that's good. And then
you want to start off a Saturday hitting hoops? I mean, really, is that are you in that dark a spot?
Seriously, man.
20.5. Seriously. Would you take it?
Yeah. Take Kansas.
Okay. Yes.
And watch the clinic on ball movement. You heard. So I think all you heard this week following the Creighton game was, what is Nebraska doing offensively? And by the way, that's a question that you can ask going back to knee. I mean, everybody used to say that. No, everybody used to say that even when Danny Knee was
Danny,
there.
You know what? Danny had a plan. You're like, well, what was it, Schmidt? It was get your ball to your future NBA dude named Lou.
Exactly.
But at least he had that dude.
Well, exactly.
Okay? But, I mean, so I don't want to hear, Danny's offense, fine. It might not have been anything brain surgery-esque, but it got wins.
Oh, no, it was just throw the ball around until someone shoots.
And
I mean, that's
it.
Essentially
hey,
what
Pike,
it was.
Go get in the corner.
Yeah, and look, and then you can say, and then same with Collier's group. Obviously, it was a different offense. They tried to run some Princeton stuff, whatever. Doc Sadler, it's almost exactly like Tim Miles' offense. It's been the most offensively challenged program, probably in major college basketball, like for decades. And it doesn't matter who the coach is.
In a Power Five.
And to see how far, you don't even have to be a basketball expert or a coach to understand, but just watch specifically against Kansas, their ball movement and how quickly, those guys are throwing fastballs to each other for a reason when they're in the half court. You know what I'm saying? Like their ball movement is a clinic, and it has
San Antonio Spurs-esque does not stick.
It's beautiful. I mean, it is absolutely. And then just think back, be like, when was the last time you saw a half court set where Nebraska did that? And you just won't be able to come up with any. It's, yeah, yeah.
Well, here's the true question.
It's ugly, man.
Here's the true question. What are your contingency options? If they defend the old stack offense weave, Kansas runs that too, by the way, where you got your three guards doing the figure eight. Mm-hmm. There's a switch, so they cut off the dribble drive. And then you go high ball screen. Okay, you got A and B shut down. What's C going to be? Well, that's right. Let's get a drive. And say they shut down your driving lanes for Webster, where he can't get to the rim or the drive and kick is not there. And they're playing zone because take the three. We beg you. There's just no answer. And I hate to unload and empty the clip this soon in the year. There's plenty of time. The Big Ten's down. Right now it is.
No, and Creighton is so legit.
Oh, completely.
They're so good. Maurice Watson, I love point guards like him. He reminds me of like Damon Stoudemire, if you go way back. You know what I mean? Just those small,
Yes, we have an Arizona Wildcat reference at 7:12 this morning.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, you know, those small, squatty point was Jameer Nelson with George Mason. Just those smaller
Jameer's
guys
got the beautiful neck tattoo.
Yeah, well, you know, but he runs like a 4-2. Just, I mean, you can't keep up with guys like that. Like, I love that. Creighton without him is a much different team.
Of course.
So you do have to do it with a grain of salt. I mean, that's a top 10 team, and Nebraska is going to face another top 10 team today. But it will highlight and it will illustrate just how far Nebraska's offense is away from being competitive.
Well, it comes down to
bad offense, man. It comes down to
what you emphasize, Kranak. And
but how do you not emphasize making the ball go into the basket when you're talking about basketball?
I understand that it's a priority because you got to score to win, but the philosophy right now is stop them from scoring to win. And it's been around the Devaney and now PBA for the last 16, 17 years.
I know.
Where defense first, second, third, and then you'll figure out a way to get some points.
It hasn't. And how has that worked out?
It's not. One tournament. Right. One tournament because you had a fringe NBA guy, another role guy that's a stretch, and you had a hybrid guy and Shields that could create his own shot with his size. So you ran into a slew of pretty good players, comparatively speaking, the last 15 years for Nebraska, talent roster-wise, and what got him to the tournament? Well, they got hot. They were still defensive-oriented, but they had that difference maker on offense to get you points when you had to have points. And it was a little more free-flowing offense, and if by definition it was because you had a difference maker that could score in Petaway. And I believe you've got more strength in numbers from offensive options when you look at Watson's ability, when you look at how easy Ed down low can get you some offensive rebounds and isn't a liability at all. He's a strength if you use him right on the screen and roll game because of his athleticism and Morrow. And then you have options. I mean, you have really good puzzle pieces here. Don't be afraid to put the puzzle together in an offensive set. And emphasize that because, right, I think it's killing them. I think it's absolutely killing them because if they don't get any stops on defense, it affects their play offensively, and it's vice versa. We talk complementary football how many times this fall? The offense going to help the defense, defense going to help the offense. Well, it's the same thing. You saw it against Creighton where they weren't getting stops defensively from time to time, i.e. Watson getting to the rim. They got deflated. They didn't respond. There was zero poise because they just – they looked at it and said, there's no way this is going to work out. They're not stopping anybody on defense, and the offense is MIA. So good luck today down in Lawrence as you carry it over.
Exactly.
We're painting like such a happy holiday picture this morning.
Wait, what'd you say? What's that?
I said we're painting such a happy holiday picture this morning.
Oh, I know. Yeah, whatever. But look, Nebraska ball is going to Nebraska ball, so we're going to let them do that. And if they get hot, we'll talk more about them when people care.
Thank you. That's the point you're on right now. That's what the Creighton beatdown turned you into. Wake me up when it gets bearable.
Well, again, when was the last time you had a Nebraska ball conversation just casually with a fan?
When they beat Michigan State. Each year they beat Michigan State, they bring you back on the bandwagon.
Yeah, okay. So I'm sure that'll happen again this year.
All right,
we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
The other thing I don't care about as much, the Heisman. Like, I'm serious. I'm not saying this because I want to have a big chat about it, but is that me, or is that thing just really lost its luster in the last few years? Maybe it's just maturing and kids, so I just don't pay as much attention, but like, I could really do not care about that.
So you're telling me your viewing habits as we near our 40s have shifted from 25 years ago, because I know what I was doing. I was wondering if Andre Ware was going to win the Heisman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was wondering if Ty Detmer was going to get the Heisman. What's happening with Barry Sanders? I mean, it used to be awesome.
Yeah, it used to be a thing.
And even I remember working an overnight shift, you know, rookie radio years, where I'm doing the overnight shift and I'm waiting for the ceremony to end to cut up audio of Crouch accepting the Heisman. And man, that's decades ago, it seems like. It is with Crouch taking home the hardware. But ever since that moment, you've kind of paid attention to it. I mean, you had the Tebow years. But what's the last Heisman winner you were pretty jacked about and then you followed him into the NFL? Is there one?
No, exactly.
I mean, yeah, Derrick Henry was a beast, but second-round pick Tennessee. He's a Bama winner, great, but you weren't that cranked up. And you and I have watched enough Lamar Jackson to have a ton of respect, and he is kind of must-see TV, especially early in the year when they took on Clemson in the shootout against Houston they had. And he's had his moments, but he's going to win it. But you're just kind of, yeah, great. It doesn't move the needle forward. For me, I mean, it's just been, it's just kind of an afterthought now. You have Peppers in the mix. You have both the Oklahoma kids that are good, but it's been a while since somebody's kind of grabbed you and taken you on that ride where you followed them extensively. At least it has been for me. I mean, I can't think of Mariota that stuck out to me just because of how emotional it was for him.
Sure, that one was good. I like that acceptance speech. And maybe part of it, too, is that there's not a lot of mystery to it anymore.
No.
And I feel like maybe before there used to be.
I think you're right on.
It's pretty obvious who's going to win the thing tonight. And so why are you going to watch it?
So how do you revamp it? Do you?
No. It is what it is. And it's also the proliferation of, I don't know, it's just a proliferation of kind of like overkill on sports and awards and all American teams and whatever in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's just so much of it that you're just, you know, how special is that one compared to any of the other 50,000 awards or teams that are named?
More isn't better is what you're telling me. Yeah. Let's get into that conversation because
bah humbug.
Right on. It's a bah humbug Saturday. Let's get into the more and better discussion for a second here with college football playoff. Have you shifted at all? I've been a pretty staunch, just give me four, keep it at four. Well, you're hearing murmurs of six, some want eight. We talked with Coach Leach this week, and he's a minimum eight guy. 16's what he'd prefer. He wasn't down with two Big Ten teams at all. He sure as hell isn't down with a non-division or non-conference champ getting in, and he wasn't piling on Ohio State. He said the Big Ten got their best in there. But just, you know, if you want to get in, you got to beat me was kind of his take. And dude's a lawyer, so he kind of won the argument. I just said, look, when it comes to strength of schedule and quality wins, and I'm a big context guy, if you lost, when did you lose? Did you lose to Pitt? I'm citing Clemson after you got through the meteor schedule and have an off Saturday. Or did you get stacked a la Wisconsin, where you're going back to back to back to back to back with road games or home road, or I should say, or home ranked opponents? I mean, when did you lose? And that to me was my main argument for Ohio State. I know they lost head to head, but look what
it was weird on a couple special teams gaps.
Right. I mean, you want to talk fluke definition? There you go. And by the way, they just been in Camp Randall the week before. Good luck surviving. Good luck surviving Madison and Happy Valley in back-to-back weeks, no matter who you are. And then I was a big Michigan guy, too, for the first time in my life because I thought they played well enough. Do you expand this? Do you think some years, yes, absolutely, you'll have eight quality teams. But honestly, I think you can go six. I think Washington, I think Penn State, and I think Michigan are all kind of about right there. Ohio State's inconsistent with their offense, and Clemson has the quarterback that can make you great on a given Saturday night with Watson. And then there's just Bama, where they've got it all. So everyone's playing for second place.
I like eight. I like at least eight. It's just because you can make such an...
Okay, so say...
Outside of the very top, outside of Alabama, basically. Alabama's playing their own sport now, basically.
They are.
But outside of them, I don't think there's a ton of separation between number two and, say, like number nine, right? Look, Ohio State is not leagues better than a lot of the teams that got left out. They're just not. You can make an argument for them, and I understand it. I understand why they got in. They only have one loss, and it was a fluky loss. I get it. But how many impressive wins do they have, right? They have the one at Oklahoma, and they beat down Nebraska, and then they beat down Maryland. Other than that, they played close games against pretty much everybody.
But they won them, is my point.
Totally. But you know what I'm saying. They're not a far and away absolute Like, I would not have had a huge problem if they were left out this year.
In favor of Penn State?
Or Michigan, I don't know.
The thing about that I love about Ohio State is, listen, they were down two touchdowns, and they won in overtime in Wisconsin. That shows some guts. They were also down, 10 points to Michigan. They gave away 21 points and still won in overtime. Just because they didn't blow them out doesn't mean they didn't make a massive comeback. So that's pretty impressive to me. You have two double digit deficits to come back from and win.
And I misspoke. I didn't mean to say that I would take Michigan over Ohio State. What I'm saying is
you don't see there much separation. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make this a referendum on Ohio State either. But what I'm saying is limiting it to four, you're leaving a lot of good teams out. That could make things really interesting. Like, really interesting. Like, Wisconsin against Clemson. Something like that. If it was like a 6-3 matchup or whatever, right? That'd be a good matchup. Wisconsin could win that game. There's a lot of... You know what I'm saying? You throw Wisconsin into that mix. You throw Michigan into that mix. Michigan against Bama? If there's one team, matchup-wise... that could hold up physically against Bama. Who is it?
It's the line of scrimmage Michigan has.
Right?
And that's my argument for them getting in.
Expand this thing a little bit.
But here's my other part.
I mean, why limit it to four?
Here's my other part, though. But what's the point
of limiting it to four?
Because you got to give a little bit of a reward for teams that survive to just lose once. Or on a worst-case scenario, twice, because your fringe...
Give them an opening round bye. Give the top two seeds or the top four seeds or whatever an opening round bye. So I don't know if that means eight or six. I'm not, you know, Pythagorean theorem here. But I'm just saying you can expand the field.
You could do it, but if you expand the field, then you need to knock out a conference game or a non-conference game. You need to dial back the regular season. You got to do, instead of three non-cons... make it two, but make it a on-face goodwill effort scheduling priority to have an Oklahoma-Ohio State. Do a little cross-reference of scheduling where you get some good matchups. Not your fault if Oregon's down, say in Nebraska's instance, or you don't know what you're getting with a Pitt in Penn State's instance. I mean, it's an in-state rivalry game, but you get my point. Make that happen. And I know that's kind of been a mandate, but it needs to be. Listen, I don't know that, like, some of the fringe teams, right? Florida State, Louisville, Oklahoma State, Western Michigan.
Those teams could beat the teams that are in the playoffs, save for Alabama.
They could.
You know what I'm saying?
They could, but I don't know that they would or it'd be worth our time, specifically Western Michigan. Nice season. I know you beat a couple of Big Ten teams. Just because you're unbeaten, not your fault, but it's reality. I don't need to see you in. I don't need to see the little guy in.
I think that'd make it fun. I think if you go 16,
you know what's
going to
happen? Wisconsin's going to be pissed off in the Cotton Bowl, and they're going to stomp out like a a finished cigarette Western Michigan. All right?
Yeah, maybe.
That's what's going to happen. Don't need to see
it. Maybe. We don't know that.
I'm getting dirty looks from TJ because apparently he's a Bronco guy now.
Yeah. We don't know that. We don't know if Western... No, come on. It's not like Wisconsin is really capable of dominating the hell out of quality teams. They haven't done that.
They have done it in their own Wisconsin cheese curd way.
Well, but either way, if you limiting it to four, it's limiting. Put it that way, it's limiting. If you expand it to six or expand it to eight, maybe throw in a couple of bye weeks or a couple of opening round buys to as a reward. You're just adding to the. I don't know. You're just adding to the whole thing.
You're adding to the fun.
Putting more teams, and you're making it possible for, you know, a team that's like number seven. Like, look at Wisconsin. Look at them, for instance, and their losses and the schedule that they went through.
Mm-hmm.
I think they deserve a shot because they've proven that they can go toe-to-toe with any of those teams. They've proven.
And you know what? They don't blow a 28-7 lead. They may have had a shot. Maybe they get in over Washington as a Big Ten champ because of their strength of schedule.
Maybe. But you know.
But now they're a three-loss team.
Why keep it at four? Put it this way. Give me a convincing argument about why you should keep it at
because
four.
Because I don't know year in and year out, you're not going to have this strength. This may be your outlier of teams that are just so good and so even. I don't know that year in, year out, you're going to have the same schedule that Wisconsin's had. Maybe you will, okay, and maybe they'll survive it. I don't see future teams thriving in this type of hostile environment like Wisconsin has. Most teams will end up 7-5. Wisconsin's defense was that special this year. Their quarterback situation was a nightmare. They survived. Moore is not better because I don't know that Moore is going to give you a great list of teams. I think by keeping it at four, you're going to guarantee you'll have a really good four-team playoff. Maybe you get two teams that are a little step below if you expand it to six. Maybe you'll get more watered-down competition if you expand it to eight. You can't guarantee me that you're going to have eight tremendous teams in a playoff to expand it. You can find four every year.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You're like, shut up, move on, you're tired.
You're surprising me. You're being conservative here. It surprises me. I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in you, Chris.
Get
I'm
in
disappointed
line.
That
Get
you're only
going
to be able to find four quality teams. I mean, come on. I mean, just by virtue of the fact that a Penn State can beat an Ohio State, a Pitt can beat a Penn State, you know, Clemson can, or, you know, like Clemson can lose a game. All those teams have lost games. They can all lose games. So just throw more into the mix. It'd be more fun.
Yeah, I mean, hell, let's get a 7-5 team in the playoff.
Well, come on. See, no one's 7-5 is going to get into the playoffs if you cut off at 8.
Not yet. What about that year where you get just a brutal draw? Well, they played the best schedule in the country and they're 7-5. I mean, it's like kind of the USC argument. USC should have been in the Pac-12 championship game, but they weren't because they had early losses.
Don't you think they could do some damage in the playoffs this year?
I think they'd be okay.
Uh-huh. That's what I'm saying. Expand it.
But you got to get there. They couldn't. Three losses. Safe driving and demand your full attention. One of every three traffic fatalities in Nebraska. Alcohol-related, many of those drivers involved buzzed while driving. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Office of Highway Safety. Recruiting weekend, great hire for Nebraska. Many Nebraska fans hoping on the coaching and recruiting aspect with Dante Williams. Steve Calhoun of Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy will tell us his story, his son's story, when Dante Williams once recruited his son, and a little insight to the new hire for Nebraska. That is next. Hail Varsity Radio continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
To rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
Yeah, we welcome in one of the top quarterback tutors in the country. Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy, armedanddangerousfootball.com. Steve Calhoun worked with Patrick O'Brien for a number of years, Cam Newton. You name it, you've probably seen one of his kids in the NFL. Steve Calhoun with us. Steve, great to speak with you again. Happy holidays. How are you?
Hey, I appreciate it, Chris. Hey, how was your Thanksgiving? And, yeah, let me wish you an early Christmas.
Man, I put them on 8 pounds, but, you know, that's how my Thanksgiving was. But, you know, that's not a shock to many. How about you? I mean, you've been watching your Jedis, as you call them, do work on and get guys ready for the bowl season, haven't you?
Absolutely. It's been a really exciting football season, you know, from youth football to NFL. You know, my guys, my Jedis have been doing great. And so it always puts a nice smile on my face.
Well, you do a great job. And your perspective on Nebraska's new assistant coach hire is something we're going to spend a few minutes on. And this is so unique. You're a proud father. You're proud of your boy. And you're also a coach. And that recruiting process as a parent, I can imagine, is entertaining. It's stressful. I mean, it's a whole bunch of different things rolled into one. And it wasn't that long ago, Dante Williams was in your living room talking to you about your son. Tell me about what Nebraska has now in the secondary as a coach, as a recruiter from the West Coast. Can you kind of put into words what Nebraska's getting on their coaching staff?
Yeah, well, Nebraska's getting an unbelievable person, first of all, that really cares about the kids and their futures and, you know, making sure they graduate and just that father figure away from home. You know, when I had a chance to meet Coach Williams when he was coaching up at University of Washington and he was recruiting my son, and also when he had, you know, got his first job at San Jose State, because he was GA'ing at UW, you know, I really had a chance to, you know, talk to him quite a bit on the phone and spend time with him. And that's just the one thing that was really noticeable, that he says, hey, you know, if you give me the opportunity to, get your kid on, you know, on our staff, I mean, on our team, you know, we would, you know, I'm going to have the same morals and values that you carry in your house, you know, here in my room, in my DB room, and also, you know, here on our team. And that really stood out to me. So, I mean, that's the one thing that really popped out, and just, you know, quality human being.
Tell me a little bit about how he's able to connect with kids, because, I mean, a number of the prospects that he's in on for Arizona, they'll listen about Nebraska, because Nebraska's got some really great connections out west. You know that. I mean, between Coach Langsdorf and Riley and Coach Keith Williams. And so, I mean, they're covered with the niche and their base in California. But it just seems like Dante Williams is a guy that is, I mean, it's not that hard to listen to him about leaving California, because he's done it. He's been a bunch of different spots. And I think there's just a great rapport. What did he do to connect with your son? What do you think he's done to connect with other kids? It's one thing to connect with the parents, got to get the decision maker, absolutely. But also the kids got to love him too.
Yeah, you know, he's able to connect because he speaks the same languages as the kids, you know, in this generation. So he's, you know, he speaks the same language. He understands, you know, what they're going through, the process they're going through as far as being recruited and what, you know, what school to choose and stuff like that. And he doesn't say, hey, you need to come here or put any type of pressure. He just kind of lays out everything, you know, that they have to offer. You know, first of all, from a DB standpoint, you know, he's one of the top technical defensive back coaches that I've ever met. So, I mean, I pride myself on being a technical quarterback coach. And so when we're talking, even though it's different positions, that's how he, you know, he's able to break it down. So, I mean, that's when he starts talking DBs, and the fact that he's able to actually do it, you know, not only explain it, but he can physically do it. Because I believe this generation now, they're not necessarily, they learn by auditory, but more by seeing. Mm-hmm. So you can actually show it. And, I mean, that's when the kids really are able to connect, because he can really explain what he's talking about. But he is definitely a really, really good communicator, and that's how he's going to be able to get a lot of kids in the door at Nebraska.
Some of the videos I've seen of him, Steve Calhoun with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Armed and Dangerous, Quarterback Academy, Quarterback Camps, and Steve has spent time and knows New Nebraska assistant coach Dante Williams pretty well. Steve Sun recruited by Dante Williams. Just watching some of his videos, he was so good, not only eye contact with the kids he's coaching, but just the technique of, all right, yes, open your hips and your leg, yeah, or step a step this way or that way 6 inches and then play the ball. How is working with him or just kind of bouncing off ideas helped you as a quarterback coach, and vice versa, how you as a quarterback coach, have you helped kind of him? Because I'm sure you guys have spitballed ideas together when it comes to development.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, for me, trying to get as much information to my quarterbacks as possible about the defense, I'm able to get a little bit of some inside information, from Coach Williams about, what type of technique he's, teaching on the defensive side of the ball, how he's playing the receivers. So that helps me as a quarterback coach and helps my quarterbacks understanding where we need to put the ball away from, those defenders and how they're breaking on it. So, just his insight and his detail. And then the one thing, as you said, you saw some video, the passion he has for playing defensive back and playing for him, that's another thing that just jumps off the page, his passion for teaching, young men about, the defensive back position.
Can you explain what it's like or what it means for West Coast kids to have one of their own in Nebraska? Because he's done the JUCOs there. He's been on the West Coast. He's been at San Jose State. He was at Arizona in the Pac-12, which means he's playing all the California schools, 50% of them back in California. And right now the kids in Nebraska are going after 4- and 5-star studs. They're 6 blocks, half a mile from USC.
Correct.
How hard is that mountain still in front of that that way to get kids east for Nebraska right now?
Well, I think the mountain is very climbable.
Okay.
for somebody as the caliber of a Dante Williams, because he's from California, like you said before, and he's just he's able to really connect and everybody out here on the West Coast can see the direction that University of Nebraska football is going, and that's what attracted, Patrick O'Brien, and they want to be a part of that. They want to be part of a great program with a long tradition, tradition of winning games and winning championships and just be around great coaches and great people. That's what the parent, me speaking of from the parent side of it, that's what I wanted, my son, and I'm sure everybody that Coach Williams is recruiting, is be around, great people and have a great atmosphere to teach young men, not only about football, but about life.
Steve Calhoun, a couple minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio, and New Nebraska assistant coach Dante Williams, one time recruited Steve Calhoun's son. So it's interesting perspective in that living room. So what did you guys, we got about 2 minutes here. Do you remember the living room sit down when he visited?
Well, it was actually up at University of Washington after a camp.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he had, I had brought my son up there to University of Washington, so we got a chance to spend quite a bit of time. We're in his environment, but what struck me, the first thing was his passion about teaching, and that's my same thing. Be passionate about it. I mean, because you can't fake passion. You really, really can't. You can hear it come through the voice and how technical he was and, what he talked about, what he can bring, as far as the skills and the teaching, to my son to allow him to grow as a player and reach his full potential. That's the one thing that really grabbed my attention.
Steve, got to leave you on this one. Patrick O'Brien is here in Lincoln, and Patrick's going to have a chance to battle for the quarterback spot once Tommy Armstrong graduates and is done. One more bowl game with Nebraska. How do you think things are going for Patrick? I know he made a lot of the road trips this year, but they decided to redshirt him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was good for him. For the fact that he traveled, be able to be in the different stadiums, see the atmosphere, see how it is on game day away from the friendly confines of, you know, Husker Stadium. And no, I think he's grown so much as a player, just being able to go through, you know, taking the mental reps, you know, being there on the sideline, you know, being there, you know, listening to the calls from Coach Langsdorf and just see how things are. He's going to take all that information, be able to process it. And, you know, when he gets home here over the break, you know, we'll be able to work on those things and get him ready for spring football, which I'm definitely looking forward to.
Well, Nebraska fans excited about Patrick and what's going on with Nebraska as they move forward. Steve, you have a great holiday, man. We'll catch up again. Thanks for sharing your personal story inside with Nebraska's new coach, Dante Williams. Take care of yourself, my friend. Thanks for a few minutes.
Okay, appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy. Steve Calhoun.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week.
What?!
Big thanks to Steve Calhoun catching up with us this week on Hail Varsity Radio, Armed and Dangerous Quarterback Academy. Good insight to Dante Williams and how Steve's son was recruited at one time by Dante Williams and seems pretty comfortable and excited because Coach Riley prides himself on a staff of just expert teachers, experts in the field. And early thoughts, at least from video, just what a communicator, motivator, and teacher Nebraska has in Dante Williams. A lot of recruits on campus today.
Five total.
Five, and we'll get into that with Aaron Sorensen of HailVarsity.com and Magazine a little less than an hour from now. Kranak, it's been kind of a quick week with the hire, the bowl announcements. And we got a few minutes here as we wind down hour one. Brandon Vogel is 10 minutes away and Gary Sharp about 30 minutes away. But overall, Tennessee, familiar name, kind of a two programs.
Champions of life.
Right. Two programs that kind of peaked early and then just had a tough finish with Nebraska, with Tennessee. And then also the opportunity for Coach Williams to make some hay here. Recruiting wise before the dead period, and then also make a great first impression on the field as a coach with Nebraska against Tennessee. So a couple of storylines emerging as we get closer to Music City 10.
Well, and what's Nebraska going to do at quarterback?
Right.
That's going to be interesting. Tommy Armstrong's not practicing yet, so right now it's Riker Fife with Darlington as his backup.
Give me the odds that he plays, Tommy Armstrong.
Oh, I'd still think it's probably 80%.
Really? Okay.
You know, I'd be shocked if he didn't.
Now, let me expand further. If he can't run, say Mr. Hamstring's not any better, and say you have Tommy Armstrong mobility-wise that you had in the Iowa game, do you play him over Riker?
I honestly wouldn't. You know, maybe he gets a few snaps, maybe just to, you know, have Tennessee's defense align in a certain way where the threat of the run is there. Mm-hmm. But no, man, that you ruin Tommy if you take away his legs. I mean, you just do. He will not be as effective as Riker would be.
The offense,
he just wouldn't.
You can argue the offense won't be as effective.
No, it absolutely won't be. I mean, he has to have his legs to play. Just period, end of story. I don't even think that's open for debate, right? Like, it's just obvious.
We're on the same page that for him to be his most effective, he gets rhythm and gets going with his legs first. That kind
he threatens the defense.
He threatens the defense, but I'm just saying for his own get into a happy place. Yeah, he needs carry it a couple of times to get rolling, and he's better throwing the ball when he can create. And
well, I think particularly against Tennessee. Now, it's been a defense that has been decimated by injuries. We think Nebraska's dealt with injuries. Tennessee's dealt with that like twofold. I mean, at one point, they had, you know, 10 guys in their two deep that were out on defense. I mean, it's been atrocious what they've done, and that's why their records ended up where it has. But you look at how they finished down the stretch, specifically against the run. I mean, oh my God, They've given up 300 plus four times this year. Four times this year, including to Kentucky. Kentucky put up 400
when I
some
think
yards
300 on. Yard games, I think Kentucky football on
and
the ground.
And Missouri put up 420 on them. And this is down the stretch, right? I'm talking in their last three games, they gave up 443 to Kentucky, 420 to Missouri, and then 192 to Vanderbilt. To Vanderbilt.
They were outscored 21-3 in the second half against Vandy.
And that's not even to mention the passing defense wasn't much better. Missouri put up like 700 freaking yards on these guys. Like, so you know what's interesting about this is that if that sort of holds serve and Tennessee doesn't get a lot of their defenders back, which they're still going to be down some guys, I just don't know the specific status. I'm going to start tracking that pretty closely. But you're looking at Nebraska potentially going in with the same game plan that they did last year in bowl season against UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
Pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, which would be, I don't know. There's something strange about that where once again, bowl season, once again, the weakness is a run defense. Once again, Nebraska completely commits to pounding the ball. And if they do that, they got a good shot to win.
Well, how committed is this Tennessee team going to be, in all honesty, to go out one more time for Butch? You've had not only injuries, but you've had two of your stars leave.
Yeah, they're a mess.
And
they're a mess.
Coach Barnett brought this up, and he just kind of throws a comment out there here and there about the timing of the bowl game. If you got those pre-Christmas bowls, you know, that kind of kick off bowl week for you, academic calendar-wise, your grades aren't in yet. So there's no threat of are you in good enough academic standing, because you can go play because it's not finalized. But you get post Christmas bowls, and we're talking those bowl games that lead up, holiday bowl, those type of games that lead up to New Year's Day, your grades are in. I mean, and I'm not saying guys aren't going to class at Tennessee, but that's something to watch, in all honesty.
Yeah,
what do they lose suspension-wise? Because of the timing of the bowl. And hey, you were picked to be an SEC East champ. You were picked to get to the SEC title game. And your reward, you get to travel 2 hours to Nashville.
Yeah.
No
the
beach,
motivation factor,
no sun. It's Nashville, which will be awesome, but you know it. Hour two coming up. Brandon Vogel next. HailVarsity.com and magazine. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, Hour 2, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning. And just getting caught up on some of the postgame from Nebraska's thrilling comeback against Penn State. Can log on HailVarsity.com, become a premium subscriber. 30 days free if you want to give us a shot. You can log on HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Great postgame video on HailVarsity.com, watching Coach Cook and his gals talk about the win. We welcome in Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Gary Sharp is 20 minutes away. Erin Sorensen of Hail Varsity to talk some recruiting. She was also at Nebraska's practice yesterday. And yes, the volleyball match, Nebraska-Washington, get rocking today. Vogues, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're all right. We kind of went bah humbug in hour one between Nebraska's offense in basketball. We spent some time talking about the quarterback situation, moving forward, getting ready for the bowl game for Nebraska, and then the college football playoff. Before we get into volleyball, Kranak wants to expand. I want to keep it at four. Now that we know how the playoffs are set, give me 30 seconds on the Brandon Vogel playoff model that the world needs to promote. Do you want more, or do you like it where it's at?
Oh, I would be just fine if they just use the FCS model, which would be 24 teams, 8 get a first-round bye. But that's probably a little bit extreme. It would never happen because of the bowl system. So at least give me the five power conference champions in there. Get the five auto bids. It probably makes most sense at eight then to do it that way.
You and making sense.
Very reasonable. Very reasonable, right? Yeah. Get the power five and then three at large. And think about what that field would have been this year. Would have been awesome.
It would have been a lot of fun. And you know, you could get there with six, but I like having the three at large, because then you could still get a group of five team in there too, which I would also be in favor of including.
Vogues, let's talk volleyball. Nebraska's amazing comeback. Coach Cook is still got tunnel vision with the task at hand, and you've done a great job of going in depth with volleyball this year and Coach Cook and their theme point by point. And can you put into words this culture, this mindset? Coach Cook was pretty adamant about how early on they were tight, and he expected just a war against Penn State because that's how it always is against Penn State. And he was almost kind of surprised that folks were surprised about how rough the match was yesterday, because he knew how good Penn State was. Like, this is what you get. It's the Big Ten. Have you not been paying attention? But they did such a great job of rallying, staying focused. Can you speak a little bit to the culture, the training, and how he has put this blueprint together? Because Nebraska's volleyball team is a beacon of light with response and finishing when it comes to high-profile games and championships.
Yeah, you know, I know that they build into their culture. They go into those sorts of matches, whether it's a lot of matches in the Big Ten now. But, you know, these sort of matches like they're going to play today, the regional final, just thinking kind of 2 points better. And, you know, if you're to put that in a football context and be like, well, just have more points on the scoreboard at the end of the day. But it's more than that when you sort of take it and use it to drive, you know, your training. So when you're in the weight room and you've got to do the last rep, you're struggling to get it done, it becomes 2 points better. You know, when you have an off day and the players are ready to go out and be on their own, it's, hey, make decisions that are 2 points better today. So when you keep hammering that message home, I think it becomes, you don't have to think about it, because you've built everything you're already doing around that idea. So it becomes more than just a saying. So whether it's 2 points better, point by point, they go into matches like that thinking already they're going to be close, but we just need to be a little bit better.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coming into this year, Cook wasn't shy about saying this might be one of his best teams ever. Have you gotten the sense that the team handles that pressure well? Do we see that pressure increasing as the tournament rolls along? Do you think they're equipped to handle it?
I do. You know, Coach Cook and this staff, they start thinking about these things and laying them out really in January. So it becomes, okay, what are the specific challenges facing this team? And one of them is sort of that. Defending a title is a completely different challenge based on who they had coming back, based on the transfers that they added. They knew that sort of that part of it, one of, you know, kind of playing against history was also part of it. So those are things that they're thinking about and have plans in place. I think yesterday's match, I mean, they were 1 point away from being done. I think getting through that will probably alleviate some of that a little bit, because people that were not watching the match but just kind of interested in volleyball around the country had to think Nebraska was knocked out, and now they're not. Now, that said, Washington swept yesterday. Nebraska had to play five game match, so that could factor in today a little bit.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. We'll get into some football in a second. Vogues, what's Coach Cook like? Folks watch him on TV, folks hear him, and they know what he's done. They know the championships he's brought. But from a leadership standpoint, can you put into words the talent that Nebraska has as a head coach?
Yeah, really driven. I think he views himself sort of as an old school football coach, which is how he started his career. But you have to sort of meld that to today's athletes, to the sport that you're coaching. And he's always really open to sort of a group of people that he trusts, but also outside influences. So he's constantly picking things that he thinks will work for his team from other coaches. Maybe it's Urban Meyer or Pete Carroll. So I think that's really the right blend. You have your sort of philosophical grounding in the things that you believe in, but if you don't stay open to how other people are thinking about the same sort of issues, things can become stale really quickly, and they certainly have them for Nebraska volleyball.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Let's switch gears to hoops real quick, and I know you're a hoops guy. I'm always astonished, and I haven't watched them this year, so I don't know if it holds true this year. But just over the past, decade plus, I think even going back to Roy Williams, that I think the more underappreciated thing about Kansas basketball is their ball movement. It is extraordinary. It's like those guys are throwing fastballs to one another when they get in that half-court set. And you compare that to Nebraska, historically, and this year included, you don't see near that amount of zip, near that amount of ball movement. I'm just curious, from you having played basketball growing up, following
He starred in basketball. Let's just lay it out there.
Well, but honestly, like, is that specifically a point of emphasis? Because it's almost like Kansas is throwing 80-mile-an-hour fastballs with a purpose around the horn. Nebraska's throwing just doing basic passes. Like, is that a specific point of emphasis? Is that a skill that you can learn? Or is that recruiting? Is that practicing? Like, how does a team get so damn good at that? And why wouldn't Nebraska emphasize something like that?
Well, that's sort of a great way to pit, you know, one of the many differences between these two programs is that, you know, the ball movement is something you can emphasize and kind of make a part of how you approach the game. And the irony here is that Kansas, with its recruiting, has five guys that don't need to rely on ball movement all that much. I mean, when they get into, you know, the Elite Eight or something like that, then you do, but they could run isolation offense and have five guys that are probably going to get to the hoop on most of the people they face. Nebraska doesn't have that, meaning it needs ball movement all the more, and it struggles to get that. You know, and it feels like sort of a problem that goes back for Nebraska basketball past multiple coaching staffs, and it's strange. There's been some guys that were scorers that needed the ball and kind of dominated the ball over that stretch. But for the most part, you kind of had a group where it seems ball movement would have greatly helped them and probably should have been an emphasis.
Vogues, what are your thoughts? What's a positive outlook for today's trip to Lawrence? I mean, what's best case scenario? I'm taking the win out of this equation, but what's Nebraska need today?
Well, they're gonna need to defend. I mean, that's sort of how they go into every game, and I think it's their best foot forward and their biggest edge. You know, Coach Molinari is obviously sort of proven his ability to come up with a great defensive game plan, and Nebraska has always had sort of the effort on that end. Eventually, you know, you can see it sort of unfolding a little bit like the UCLA, where Nebraska can keep the score down. Play their sort of game. At some point, the talent wins out, and Kansas is just going to get too many baskets. Well, Nebraska's probably going to struggle to hit them consistently. So, you know, if they could be in the 10, 12, 14-point game at the end of the day, I think that's a pretty good showing on the road at Kansas.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. It's likely a 20 to 30-point game, so let's just move on. let's look ahead to the Music City Bowl in Tennessee. Early scouting report on the Vols, and I know we'll get a lot deeper into it as we get closer, but on the surface, man, you look at two of their last three games, and they've just gotten smoked defensively. Smoked, like 700-plus yards to Tennessee, 600-plus to, to Missouri, 600-plus to Kentucky. You know, Vanderbilt put up ridiculous amount of yards to. Is that simply an injury situation, or is that more of the team losing interest? What do you attribute that to? And will Nebraska face a similarly beleaguered defense come the end of the month?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of those two things. And it's not, you know, people look at that and say, oh, well, once Tennessee lost to Alabama, it kind of fell off a cliff, but that's not really the case. You know, if they'd beaten Vanderbilt, they're going to the Sugar Bowl probably. So they had plenty to play for in that game. Pretty scathing article in 24/7 Sports this week, or on 24/7 Sports this week, about sort of questions about Butch Jones' culture. So I think there's probably a little bit of a motivation angle there. Once this season kind of tanked, they'd been building to this for 4 years. You lost a little bit of that focus defensively, and they were dealing with a lot of injuries. Now, their offense sort of was the opposite axis of that defensive graph. The offense is playing really, really well, like better than it had played earlier in the season. So basically, Tennessee has become a Big 12 team here at the end of 2016.
You described the culture of Coach Cook and what Nebraska volleyball's about. It sounds like the Tennessee culture is the anti-Cook. Can you expand a little further?
Well, you know, Butch Jones, his big thing is brick by brick. And they thought they had done brick by brick for 3 years and had a sturdy enough wall that could stand up to the SEC East. And then it just got pushed right over. So they're kind of back to, I think, picking up the pieces. You know, one of the things that came out in the stories by Travis Haney, it's up 24/7. The most damning thing in my mind was, there are some people who aren't concerned this is a job Butch Jones wants, that he might be happier back at a place like Cincinnati or a group of five conference. That's kind of troubling if you're 4 years in and that's what some of the people inside the program are saying. So we'll see. Motivation's a big part of bowl games. I'd be surprised if Tennessee was totally up to head 2.5 hours west and play in Nashville, but we'll see. That's obviously nothing Nebraska can count on.
Another article this week at Alabama. The what if game is kind of fun to play, and you can go back in history. You know, what if Barry Sanders or Marshall Faulk ended up at Nebraska? Just from a recruiting standpoint. Well, the 10-year anniversary came and went to the day where there was an agreement in principle for Rich Rodriguez to be the new head coach of Alabama. Things didn't work out. Saban was their second choice. They talked him into it. Him and Miss Terry flew to Tuscaloosa, leaving T.J. Henning's Miami Dolphins. Interesting story. Did you get yourself lost in thought at all this week, Vogues, about where Alabama'd be with Rich Rodriguez? I mean, because that's something the world, I think, would take. Let's see how that would have worked out. Because right now, you've got a juggernaut, you've got a dynasty, you have dominance.
Yeah, I did spend some time thinking, like, how long would it have taken for Alabama to end up with Saban after that had happened? So, you know, just assume that Rich Rod had his Michigan tenure, but it was at Alabama. So he gets 3 years, gets run out. Where is Saban at that point? Because I don't think he's still with the Dolphins. He's probably back in college somewhere, depending on when how the openings played out. Where is it? And is it someplace that Alabama could pry him from? So I think knowing how it has played out at Alabama, I think Saban was pretty well aware of what was possible in Tuscaloosa. So he probably still ends up back there, but it's 3 years later down the road.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. And you know, Alabama, when you think about arms races, they're kind of leading the pack in just about everything, and they've been paying their strength coach forever. And you wrote about that this week on HailVarsity.com about that maybe being one of the new fronts in the arms race. Like I think last decade or so, you could say it was facilities, assistant coaches, salaries is up there, but strength coaches are now one of those new fronts. So just maybe expand a little bit on that thought you had.
Yeah, you know, Iowa came out right before this past season started and announced they were going to pay their strength coach $600,000. And everyone was kind of like, well, what's going on? Why is Iowa doing that? But you've seen sort of Iowa's results the past two seasons, really, when you combine Earth past three, been pretty strong. So it's basically the guy who can spend the most time with your team throughout the offseason. So in that regard, it makes a lot of sense to basically pay that guy about as much as you're going to pay a coordinator in a lot of cases, unless you're in the SEC, where coordinators get $1.8 million now. So, you know, it is kind of an emerging thing. You know, 4 years ago, it was kind of the assistants pool. That's why Brett Bielema left Wisconsin for Arkansas, allegedly. So now it might be, I don't have enough money to pay my strength coach. I'm out of here. And it kind of makes sense.
Vogues, what's coming up on HailVarsity.com? Busy Saturday again. Husker hoops, of course, Husker volleyball. And tell folks a little bit about the community that is Hail Varsity.
Yeah, you know, we've got a couple of people headed down to Kansas for basketball. We've got a couple of people headed to Lincoln for volleyball, or already in Lincoln. So we'll have both of those things covered. In terms of Hail Varsity, the community, you know, we've started message boards and forums. It's been a ton of fun to be on there. You know, you kind of find, we're trying to create, you know, a people's group, really. It's good to have the group of people, you know, you can go and sort of talk freely about Nebraska athletics or barbecue books. I mean, we're talking about books, movies, TV shows, all things that have come up on the board. So it's a pretty fun conversation. People want to check it out. You can do a 30-day free trial. Just go to HailVarsity.com and basically follow directions.
That'll be awesome. Vogues, have a great Saturday. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, thanks, guys.
Awesome stuff. Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. We'll get caught up with Erin Sorensen here shortly. Her thoughts on the first time that the media got to meet Coach Dante Williams, and she was at the volleyball game yesterday. Some recruiting thoughts from her as well. I want to remind you about Sauter Heyman. Tis the season to get amazing discounts. Of course, Rick and the gang at Sauter Heyman offering instant discounts, and it's better to give, right? They're giving away free trips with qualifying purchase now through December 31st. Get your significant other the gift she really wants. And how about you get a free trip while you're at it? And I'm not talking a trip to my grandparents out in McCook. How about Cancun, where it's warm and not 20 degrees? How about Vegas, where there's lots of things to do? Find out more. See stores for details. And find your way to Sauter Heyman for that amazing holiday gift, instant discounts, and free trips. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion in Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island. Go see Santa Rick at Sauter Heyman. SauterHeyman.com, yourbestring.com. A quick timeout. The Iron Horse, Mr. Gary Sharp, next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Back to you. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning, the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp with us. Sharpie, good morning. How are you, man?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Now, I've got a disappointed 10-year-old. About midway through the Nebraska-Creighton game, Junior turned to me and said, can I get some ice cream? And I'm like, well, go talk to Sharpie Claus. And he's still waiting on that ice cream, Gary.
Well, you know, there was a lot of traffic of the people leaving the game, so he ran into those people and he couldn't get over to where I was.
No, I know. Well, a lot to get to. Yeah, bowl practice had cranked up. Dante Williams made his debut, recruits on campus today, and just a lot going on. And I want to get your thoughts here, and we were just talking about it with Brandon Vogel regarding the kind of the new arms race, and Vogues wrote about it with one of his hot reads this week. And you've had shifts from obviously head coaches' pays exploded, multi-millions of dollars. Then you have assistance pools that have increased, and Nebraska paying assistants well. They went out and got another big-time recruiter and really good teacher, it looks like, in Coach Williams. And then you've had, I go back to a year ago, right, when you had Kirby Smart leaving for mm-hmm. Georgia. He was trying to rip and poach the Alabama strength coach, and that's kind of, it seems like, where things are trickling down. How attractive do you think Nebraska's staff is, guys on that staff, be it strength or be it assistance, to other programs trying to make that next step? Are other programs, you think, kind of peering at what Coach Riley has on staff?
Well, you know, the study that came out earlier this week in USA Today about the assistant coach salaries, and there's 191, I believe, that make over 400,000,
yeah.
And six of those are at Nebraska. I think everyone gets caught up nowadays in what the head coach makes. Well, we should get caught up in what the program or the university is committing to the football program. For example, I mean, you know, 5-10 years ago, we all thought this would happen, that Purdue would pay their head football coach a higher base salary than the Oregon head football coach. But you look at what Purdue is doing in terms of a assistant coach's salary pool, what they're doing for off-field personnel. I think with the Big Ten schools, and especially Nebraska, and I was, you know, glad to see next year's home schedule is a lot more appealing, but Nebraska is going to keep the season ticket prices at the same level. And I think with the influx of Big Ten money, TV money, you can give back to the fans, but you can also spend money. Now, you have to spend money wisely. You have to make good hires. You can't just go out and throw $600,000 around at someone. They've got to be a fit. They've got to be a good hire. But it's now, in the Big Ten especially, the Purdue's of the world and the Illinois's of the world are going to start to make a little bit of noise. They're not going to always be a gimme because they do have an influx of money that they haven't had before at that level to go out and spend. But I think you're going to see, especially non-head coaching positions, will get a lot more attention in terms of dollars, whether it be linebacker coaches, whether it be strength and conditioning coaches. They're going to get paid because at most, you know, some of those places, that's the lifeblood of your program.
Gary, what do you make of the of Purdue's hire of Jeff Brohm when you compare it to, you know, a few years ago, Daryl Hazel was lauded as a good hire. This one is sort of being lauded as a good hire too. But Purdue was Purdue. What do you make of it?
Well, I think anytime you can hire a former XFL quarterback, that's a good
thing. Of course, no doubt. Know,
Tommy Maddox is not available, so Jeff Brohm is the next best. I think for what Purdue wants, I don't know that he's a splash hire for a regular fan. I think for people that cover the sport on a daily basis, they look at this hire and go, good on Purdue. They thought outside of the box. Instead of going after the new hot MAC coach, they went after a coach that has a nice little proven record, but has a proven record of developing quarterbacks, a very good offense, and he's been able to put together a really good staff at Western Kentucky. And so I think this is a hire by Purdue that is going to make people in the West pay close attention. And you know what? The bottom of the West is going to get better, where you're going to have those teams stepping up, where every weekend is not a gimme, so that you got to be dialed in every week. But I really like the hire. Now, they'll play basketball on grass. Can they play defense? You know, Joe Tiller did the same thing, but Joe Tiller had a little bit of a defense, and 15 years ago, Purdue was pretty respectable. So I like the hire a lot. I think if you look at the Big Ten, why the Big Ten has really elevated themselves over even the SEC is because they've made very good hires in the head coaching positions. I mean, half of the league has a new head coach in the last 2 years, and most of those have been, on paper, really good hires and still waiting to see what they do on the field. But they've drawn attention. The coaching's gotten better in the Big Ten. I think Purdue hit a home run.
Let's talk about what type of at-bat Nebraska had with the hiring of Dante Williams. What's your immediate reaction?
Well, they got what they were looking for. They wanted a dynamic recruiter in Southern California, and they wanted a guy that could teach. I basically think they hired Keith Williams for the defensive side of the football, a guy that is very good at relationship building, has a ton of energy, has a good connection with his players. I mean, this is a guy that Nebraska identified probably over a month ago and said, okay, let's find a place for him, and how is it all going to work out? And they went out and they got their man, and it just shows you what they think of him and what he can return on his investment. You're paying a guy that is 34 years old who has only had 1 year of coaching experience at an FBS school, you're paying him over $400,000. So you think highly of what he can bring to the table. Now his return on investment is two or three of those players from Southern California say yes to Nebraska. But more importantly, that his cornerbacks, when we get into the season into 2017 that those cornerbacks develop, because he's getting a good group of guys to work with. I really like the hire. I mean, I think it shows you, if you ask Mike Riley right now going into year three, what do you need to win the West? He's still on the train of, we've got to develop competitive depth, and we're going to get there by recruiting, and then we'll transition into taking that competitive depth on a daily basis and winning on Saturday every time.
Now, speaking of recruiting, Nebraska's got five guys on campus today. Les Miles' son is here, Tyler Shelvin, an all-everything defensive tackle that's been recruited to or committed to LSU for quite some time. It would be a huge get for John Perella. But speaking of Williams, I thought this stat was unbelievable that Jake Jensen from Hale Varsity uncovered. In 4 years as a D1 assistant, Williams signed 50 players, and they're all from California. Like, the dude hasn't signed somebody from not from California. He 50 guys in 4 years, all from that state. And you look at the flavor that Nebraska's staff already had, which was pretty California heavy, just by virtue of being at Oregon State for so long. Any concerns there about Nebraska maybe being over-indexed in the West? Or do you think it's fine and just kind of wherever you can get players, you get players?
No, I think, Mark, you bring up a valid concern. Nebraska's had, because of you recruit where you're familiar with, and I think you have three individuals that are very familiar with Southern California and have done well in Southern California. But one thing that Dante Williams does with bringing him on staff, it frees up some other guys to go explore other parts of the country where they've had success as well. So it's not like you're putting three guys and position them, you know, on the 5, on the 405, and on the 10. You are taking Dante Williams and saying, okay, you're now our lead guy in Southern California, and some other guys then can branch out. But if Nebraska is able to go to California and get their skill guys, and they have success there, and those skill guys produce on the football field, I don't have any problem with it. You know, Nebraska is a national brand that can go anywhere. But I do think that Nebraska, with Dante Williams, is able to take Brian Stewart and move him out, or Keith Williams and give him another part of the country where he's had success in. So there's a lot of dominoes to this whole recruiting thing, but buckle up. It sounds like for the next 2 months, it's going to be crazy as Nebraska tries to, you know, fill up that class. I know Mike Riley locked into a number. I think the most important number is 85, and that's, you have to have 80. You can't have more than 85 on scholarship when you get to kickoff time. So watch what Nebraska does with the recruiting class, but also watch guys that may say, you know what, maybe I committed too early to Nebraska with two guys visiting elsewhere today.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Hold on. Wait a second there. Are you also talking that Nebraska may start processing some guys on the current roster too?
I think there's sometimes in college football these days, you have involuntary retirement.
You can play football, you just can't play here.
Well, and I think you have some attrition. Some guys, maybe they want to focus on their studies. Maybe they want to do something else, and you thank them for their time, and maybe they move on.
Involuntary retirement. Okay. Sharpie, five visitors today. And overall, give me a big picture gut feel on how you think things can close before February here. What's your radar say? What do you think?
Well, I think you got a couple of guys that have been kind of in for Nebraska for a while. It's just their date of when they're going to announce is still to come. I think for the next 2 months, if you want to gauge progress, and there was progress this year, for Nebraska, it might be more progress than the naked eye could see, but you have to start to reel in some guys. Give me a guy that makes me go, wow. Wow is some guys that are on campus, but now it's time to reel them in, because you don't get points in the fall for guys that came to visit you and are playing somewhere else. So I think if Nebraska can finish up strong, and of course, you mentioned Tyler Shelvin, that might be, you know, swinging for the fences, but if they can get some big game-changing guy that you can look at and say, you know what, I could see him on the field in this upcoming season, then that's done it for me. But the thing to watch is, the interesting dynamic as this class comes together, is there's quite a few of important guys in the class of 17 that are going to enroll early. Like Avery Roberts, I think, will be starting in the fall for Nebraska at linebacker. I think he's the best player in this class. I think he is an absolute steal to get him out of the Philadelphia area and away from Penn State. I think he'll be starting, but you look at the Calabrasca kids, they're coming early. So it's kind of an interesting class. But I think Nebraska needs somebody. It would be nice before you went to Nashville to have somebody say yes, where you go, okay, here we go, the train is moving right along, and then finish up strong in January like they did last year.
Sharpie, quickly, a thought on Tennessee-Nebraska. Early thoughts going in. It's been about a week since the announcement. We'll get further into it the closer we get, but do you like this matchup?
Well, it's a matchup of – it all comes down to motivation. You know, if Nebraska loses, I think it's tolerable in the off season because we're on to recruiting. If Tennessee loses, it's miserable for Butch Jones because people are wondering what's going on, and he's immediately on the hot seat. But let's be honest. Between now and December 30th, the thing that's going to get the most clicks, going to get the most phone calls on talk shows, is going to get the thing that everybody wants to talk about the most is recruiting. Recruiting, recruiting, recruiting. You know, there won't be as much attention towards the bowl prep. It'll be more on, okay, who might be involved in that bowl prep next year? And that's kind of where we're at right now. But, you know, once we get closer to the game, there'll be excitement for a bowl game. Good matchup for Nebraska. You know, who knows who's going to play, who will be motivated. But I think right now you focus on recruiting instead of who's going to be starting at quarterback for Nebraska.
Absolutely. Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, we'll catch up again. Thanks for a few minutes today, man.
Hey, thanks, guys. Feliz Navidad.
You too. Appreciate it. Feliz
Gracias.
Navidad. We haven't seen any Corona commercials yet. I haven't seen that yet.
No, I haven't seen those in a while either. They do a pretty good job usually. Yeah, Their beer isn't very good.
Well, the one palm tree that's lit up. I mean, usually that thing's ran 7,000 times.
Yeah, it's not very good beer, though. Let's be honest. It's not.
I think you're blaspheming that there's such thing as bad beer. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there is. It's when you put stuff in clear bottles, you open yourself to spoiling the beverage.
Thank you.
That's why you're supposed to use dark bottles. These guys use clear bottles. That gets hit by the sun. It changes the composition. It's terrible. Hmm. It's bad beer. Let's be honest.
I'm going to disagree with you there. A quick timeout. We'll talk some recruiting. Get caught up with a practice report. Aaron Sorensen up next of Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranek.
Let's get caught up, talk some recruiting, get caught up on Husker volleyball and Nebraska football as they got ready for Tennessee back at practice. Aaron Sorensen with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Aaron Sorensen on Twitter. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Is your heart slowed down from the match, the epic yesterday?
I don't know. I'm kind of just in a state of, like, hard to believe that they're even still alive to keep competing today. But, you know, that just goes to show the type of team that this volleyball team is.
It was an incredible comeback, and
it was.
what did you gauge and gather, not only from the way they finished, but just the post game as you were covering it for Hail Varsity? And what did you take away from Coach Cook and the ladies after the match?
Yeah, the three different players and then Coach Cook, what they were primarily talking about, and I thought that this is just a really great way of viewing it, is they take everything point by point. So instead of, like, yeah, it gets stressful when you are, you know, in that situation. You're down two matches, but they don't view it like that. It's everything is point by point. You take the next one, and, you know, I think the best quote was something along the lines of, you can't get to 24 if you don't get to 23. So that's just how they really viewed it. That's how they went forward. And I thought that was just I personally thought that was just a really smart, you can just tell that the maturity of that team. It's a lot of credit to Coach Cook that they can stay that poised when they are rightfully stressed being in that situation.
Aaron Sorensen with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Aaron, Dante Williams yesterday meets with the media first time. You were there. Your impressions of seeing him in person and hearing him?
Yeah, it's exactly what I said to you guys yesterday. As I said to Chris, that, you know, Dante Williams just seems like a cool dude. That's the best way for me to put it. And he comes up to the press conference in his gloves and cleats, and that's exactly what he did. I mean, both Josh Banderas and Nathan Gary talked about that. They're like, yeah, the guy, like, we didn't really get to talk to him, but he, like, comes out and he has his cleats on. He's basically ready to go. And Dante Williams believes that, and I keep saying his first name. I haven't figured out how to address him with the whole Keith Williams, Dante Williams thing. But
no, it's fine.
So I feel like he's always going to forever now be Dante Williams, just full name. And
D-Dub?
I mean, D-Dub, yeah, K-Dub. We'll figure that out as time goes on. But They were, it was just so, it was so interesting to listen to him. He's very much about, you know, some people don't learn by explanation, they learn by showing. So if he can show you, he's going to. He's very active. He's very a part of, you know, being out there, showing them what they need to do. And that was just pretty cool. And I really just enjoyed how quick he was with the answers of, like, you know, someone asked, how's the move going? Great. Going great. You know, and how's the, you know, how are the recruits responding? Great. Like, I mean, he just is like, he's just like, you can tell he's just seamlessly fitting in and he's just having a good time with it. So I'm excited to hear more from him as the bowl practices go on.
Aaron Sorensen with us, at Aaron Sorensen on Twitter, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Aaron, let's talk recruiting. Five visitors today. Give me kind of a rundown who's in town.
Well, the one that, like, I actually got to see at practice yesterday was Dalvin Holmes. He was watching practice. He seemed pretty, you know, it was just like any kid. If you get the opportunity, you kind of feel like a superstar, and that's definitely how he was being made to feel. And that was pretty neat to see. The other two that stand out to me out of all of the visitors, besides, I know, the one that, like, I think threw people a little bit for this week is Corian Ballard. He was actually here during the week for his visit. He's not here now this weekend, and I think that threw people a little bit for a loop because he's already gone. But the two that really have stood out to me also, you've got Chuck Filiaga and then Isaac Slade Matatulia. And, like, I told you yesterday, I butcher his name, and I'm going to...
No, you got it right.
Yes, I'm so glad. I'm just terrible, like, by the way, with pronunciations anyway. Volleyball gives you pronunciations, and it's the best thing I've ever heard. I was like, this is a gift. This is the best thing. So for those of us who need those, you know, pronunciation guides, they've got it on lock. But I'm kind of now wondering what Isaac's thinking because it's snowing in Nebraska today, and he is definitely a warm weather guy, but I mean, this is quite the experience. If you want to kind of get a good taste of what Nebraska is all about, you're getting it right now.
It's important. It doesn't snow all the time in Nebraska. Is Isaac Slade, Muiatatala is a middle linebacker from
Hawaii.
So yeah, he's Hawaiian, and Filiaga's a big time tackle from Texas. So two big guys on campus. Ben Miles also here, and then Gavin Holmes, the wideout from Texas, the decommitted from Iowa. Aaron, got about 2 minutes here. Any buzz around the program when it comes to Nebraska staff, assistant strength coach, what's going on?
Yeah, actually, Riley talked a little bit about that yesterday. One thing that we've been speculating is that the NCAA will potentially be allowing a 10th coach here as early as the spring. And if that is to happen, Riley wants to look for somebody on offense. I would peg potentially someone to be focused on the tight ends. He feels that would be, and that's me projecting, but, you know, having somebody on offense in additional, you now have your staff split 5-5. It's good for the players, good for recruiting. That's kind of where Riley was going with that yesterday. But now, in my opinion, just from the rumblings that I've heard, there is a potential that there could be some other departures over time. Mark Phillip, he has some connections to LSU now with Ed Orgeron. Mm. He, you know, they overlapped at USC. It sounds like there might be some interest there. It's obviously all rumors until we hear otherwise, but his name has definitely been brought up. The one thing that's just always hard is in the ever-moving world of college coaches, you just never know how much of it is. You just never know how much of it is, like, real and how much of it is maybe just a lot of speculation, but for right now, that would be the person I'd keep an eye on is what does Mark Phillip do, especially now in the off season? Does he depart Nebraska? Does he go to LSU? Because strength and conditioning coaches are definitely in high demand now.
I think what is certain is Mark Phillip will get paid, and he deserves to get paid.
Right, somebody will.
be it here or somewhere else, and he's done an amazing job, as has Aaron Sorensen. Great coverage of volleyball, Nebraska football, and you can find her and subscribe. HailVarsity.com/subscribe, the premium community for you as a Nebraska fan. And Aaron, we'll get caught up with you next week. Thanks for the insight. Thanks for the rundown today.
You bet. And hey, go volleyball. I'll be down at the Devaney again today. Hopefully they've got another thriller in store, but one a little easier on my heart.
That'll be good. And we'll be following you on that. Take care. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
All right. Good stuff. Aaron Sorensen with us.
Keep an eye on that with Phillip, though.
Oh, absolutely. He's making, and the list from USA Today that Vogue's had in his hot reads. I think 211 is the number that Mr. Mark is making, him and his staff. And, I mean, you and I spent how many weeks this year during the fall recapping the previous week and how that fourth quarters went?
Yeah.
I mean, tip your cap. The players put the work in, but he got them motivated and ready.
Look, and he's paid a little bit lower because he had never been a head guy.
Sure.
And so who knows? He might be due a raise. This might be a negotiating thing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, Ed's got a lot of folks he's crossed paths with as well. So we'll be back to you next Saturday, the weekend edition. Mark Cranack, DJ Henning, Chris Schmidt, thanks for tuning in.